Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring discussions and research papers related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Robert Johnson, a York Rite Mason and Knight Templar. So right off, I'd like to apologize for some of the sound issues we had last month. The levels were all over the place. Hopefully we'll get them right this week. I was saddened to hear that our brother Scott over the weekend at the Digital Freemason is throwing in the towel. I hope it's temporary. Yeah, just the same, it looks like you'd be able to get to all the episodes and still visit the Digital Freemason website and still have access to all the episodes on iTunes as well. I read his farewell and I was really bummed out. But this is a difficult hobby to accommodate in your lifestyle, especially when you have a family and are active in Lodge, as I know Scott was. So Scott, if you're listening, thanks for all the great episodes and good luck in the future. We will miss the show. And hopefully we'll continue to download his podcast as well over at thedigitalfreemason.com, and he's also on iTunes, so check it out. So last week we covered the York Rite's Royal Arch. If you missed it, please check it out. I think you will be intrigued to say the least. This week we'll be looking at the next progression of degrees in the York Rite, the Cryptic Council, which consists of three degrees, the Royal Master, Select Master, and Super Excellent Master. Here is some information on each. Information is provided by YorkRite.org, the official York Rite website. The cryptic degrees are a set of three degrees controlled by the Select Masters Council. The degrees get their name from the reference to a hidden or secret vault in the degrees, hence the term cryptic. Only the first two degrees are regularly worked. The third degree, that of Super Excellent Master, is worked as an honorary degree, not being required as a requisite for membership in the council. It is also somewhat peculiar in its association with the cryptic degrees, as it is more closely allied in theme and character with the Royal Arch and the illustrious Order of the Red Cross. The history of the body as a whole is also shrouded in uncertainty and controversy. Though there is early evidence of councils of royal and select masters being worked in the United States, the degrees were worked variously by their own councils, Royal Arch, chapters, and even lodges of perfection of the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite. Though the Scottish Rite has long relinquished any claim to these degrees, several grand jurisdictions still confer them as part of the Capitular Masonry. In England, the degree of Most Excellent Master is grouped with this body. In the United States, all business is conducted in a Select Masters Council, the other two bodies only being opened on the conferral of degrees. Some jurisdictions hold table councils in similar manner to table lodges, as a social focal point of their York Rite bodies. Royal Master, a degree emphasizing the lessons of patience and fortitude. The degree centers around the fellow craft masons, who were the artificers of fabricating the fittings and furniture of the temple. It is unusual in that the first part of the degree depicts events taking place before the death of the Grand Master Hiram Abiff, and the last part depicts events occurring after his death. Select Master, a degree emphasizing the lessons of devotion and zeal. The degree centers on the construction and furnishing of the secret vault beneath the Sanctum Sanctorum of the temple, and the deposition of those secrets pertaining to the craft by the three ancient Grand Masters of the craft. This degree bridges the events surrounding the concealment and loss of the ineffable word, and the events leading to the recovery of the word in the Royal Arch degree. The presiding body is a council, and the presiding officer is a master, titled Illustrious Master. The Super Excellent Master, a degree emphasizing the lessons of loyalty and faithfulness. The degree centers around the events leading to the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple at the hands of the Chaldeans. The degree is narrated by small interludes of biblical prophecy, the highlight, the end of the first temple and the construction of the second temple. It is noteworthy for its scenes of the Jewish court of Zedekiah and the Chaldean court of Nebuchadnezzar. This degree is an honorary one, and a member of the council not needing to have it in order to hold membership or office. Please be aware that you do not have to complete the cryptic council degrees in order to go into the Knights Templar, but in my opinion, you wouldn't understand the Templar degrees fully unless you had the cryptic degree conferred upon you. So next week, we'll continue with the York Rite. We'll tell you a little bit about the Commandery, or Knights Templar, also known as the Order of the Temple. This week's segment on a famous Freemason is on a man who made us laugh, created controversy, and was known for his comedic style, Brother Richard Pryor.
My grandmother came out here. I took him to Vegas and stuff for the first time, and I gave my grandmother a $100 chip to go gamble. She cashed it in.
December 1st, 1940 through December 10th, 2005. The first recipient of the prestigious annual Mark Twain Humor Prize in 1998, Richard Franklin Lennox Thomas Pryor III, was an influential and popular American comedian, a veteran of 40 films between 1967 and 1991. He has been featured in 4 films: Live and Smokin', Richard Pryor Live in Concert, Richard Pryor Live on Sunset Strip, and Here and Now. His recordings have earned him 2 platinum albums, 5 gold albums, and 5 Grammys. He became a Freemason at Henry Brown Lodge No. 22 in Peoria, Illinois. Now, I couldn't find much on his Masonic career, probably due to the fact that he was so successful in entertainment business, he didn't have time to continue that. So if you know anything else about Brother Richard Pryor and his career in Freemasonry, feel free to write the show, make a comment, check it out on Facebook, write something down, and we'll get it on the show. We'll definitely put it out there for everybody to hear. Now, I was reading a magazine, a digital magazine, called The California Freemason. It's a really good magazine. If you have an iPad or an iPod Touch, you can check it out. I was reading it the other day, and there was a great article about an entered apprentice's journey. And amidst the story, they printed a poem which hung in the doorway of Mother Teresa's house in Calcutta, India. I'd like to share it with you now. People are often unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people may accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you are successful, you will win some false friends and some true enemies. Succeed anyway. If you are honest and frank, people may cheat you. Be honest and frank anyway. What you spend years building, someone could destroy overnight. Build anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, they may be jealous. Be happy anyway. The good you do today, people will often forget tomorrow. Do good anyway. Give the world the best you have, and it may never be enough. Give the world the best you've got anyway. You see, in the final analysis, it is between you and your God. It was never between you and them anyway. I hope you enjoy that short poem. Like I said, I think it really puts it out there. It's a real Freemasonic ideal, which is why I think it appealed to me. To do the best you can, to be true, to be moral. Things were taught from birth, but even more so in Masonry. And with that, we'll go into this week's research paper. It's a short one. It's called Freemasonry and Its Landmarks. The author is unknown. Why has Freemasonry existed so long as it has? I claim its existence is due to the fact that it is not a secret society. 'Tis true, we have modes of recognition, rites and ceremonies, and secrets with which the profane are not acquainted. Nor can its beauties be appreciated without a thorough knowledge of its mystic language, composed as it is of gems of philosophy linked with beautiful symbols, and its charity falls as noiselessly as the dews of heaven. Yet, strictly speaking, it is not a secret society. A secret society is one of those gatherings where men meet to discuss things in strict confidence without giving to the world any knowledge of its mission. Men are condemned to die. Plots and conspiracies are entered into. Anarchy holds full sway. And deeds that are dark, foul, and damnable are accomplished. The world is not permitted to know of whom it is composed, its place of meeting, its profound secret, and all connected with it are schemers, plotters, atheists, who have the stamp of perdition on their souls. To illustrate my position, I point you to the famous Clanagale, to the Dread Mafia, and others of the same stamp. Their history is too well known for comment. They are secret societies that breed death and destruction. Their own members, to divulge their dark deeds, meet with instant death. Now, if Masonry is paraded as a secret society, its days are numbered. But from this, we have nothing to fear. Now, if it is not a secret society, what is it? It is a private society formed on the broad basis of brotherly love, relief, and truth. No free man with the essential physical qualifications is denied admission if he be good and true. Its constitutions are for the world to behold. The ancient charges and regulations are open for inspection. Its tenets and cardinal virtues add luster to its brilliancy. Its laws and jurisprudence are published to the world. These things are not secret. No man, however great his prejudice, will deny the fact that it has a good effect on the human race. It has existed while other things of human invention have died. It exists today because it inculcates every virtue. It has survived the bulls against it from Rome, the prosecution of kings and emperors. There must be a cause for this. While Masonry does not offer a pass to heaven, yet its banner is painted in gilded letters of faith in God and hope in immortality. This, to my mind, is the key to the situation. Its teachings have always been so pure that its votaries have guarded it with loving fidelity. It cannot die, because it is built on a firm foundation, has principles underlying it that will make it endure till time shall be no more. No human institution has ever had such vile indignities heaped upon it. The popes insist, the Masonic Society admits the believer and the atheist on a common platform. They claim that it is and has been engaged in war against the Church and the governments of Earth. What silly expressions! Have they acquainted themselves with its lectures, with its symbolism? Had they investigated before passing sentence? They might have been honored by joining this grand procession of the world's greatest men, in marching on to the summit and perfection of our aim, truth. Freemasonry has existed because it teaches the moral law. The man who takes the name of God in vain is guilty of a Masonic offense. It exists because it has never stooped to the intrigues of politicians. It exists because it is a universal language found in no other society. It exists because it is a science based on the philosophy of that religion in which all men agree, that of the existence of a supreme ruler and the immortality of the soul. When kingdoms and republics have fallen, when wars have been fought between nations, it will exist on the side of the conqueror and conquered alike. Its landmarks are indestructible. Freemasonry has been established for generations. It has maintained its peculiar characteristics. It has never changed. Its principles have been maintained. Its esoteric teachings are unaltered. Its ceremonial has been conserved. Its traditions are given as in the day of the aforetime. Its landmarks are indestructible. The devotion of its associates now is as earnest, sincere, and impregnable as at the beginning. The history it has made is unassailed. The foundation on which it rests are eternal. These facts will hardly be denied, even among the incredulous profane. Faith in them is the heritage of the true Mason. What other human institution can make these claims on the intelligent, thinking students of the records time has written on, now, as it becomes was? There must therefore be in Freemasonry some special vitality, some indefinable spirit or essence, some superhuman inherent faculty that has operated to secure such results. Through the ages, Freemasonry has lived and maintained its character. When the rise and fall of empires, the revolutions in thought, opinions, and forms of government had worked out changes among mankind, when iconoclasts had broken images, the laws, social order overthrown many institutions, made martyrs and victims, and immolated many of their devoted adherents, yet Freemasonry lived, strong, persistent, reliant, filled with faith, and ready for perils. The craft never faltered in the performance of its duties. In caves on the mountaintops, the craft met and obeyed teachings they had received. Thus did the brethren conduct their ceremonies. They were animated by the spirit of a devotion to their association that seemed to partake of a solemn recognition as a revelation. Their social relations, their identification with the people of their country, their responsibilities as units in the communal organizations of which they were part, while rendering them amenable to the profane laws, in no way weakened the ties or bonds that bound them to the fraternity of the craft. They were ever, always, Freemasons. These Freemasons were often only a few persons. It may be said, in one sense, their strength came out of their weakness. But no, it was the strength that the history of the past of the craft made irresistibly potent. It was a faith that had marked the concurrent evidences of the indestructible organization which came to them from their fathers. The quiet, pervading courage of the craftsmen would not desert the lodge. The principles, which were the cementing power of the foundations of Freemasonry, were the refuge and defense of the brethren. The teachings of the Great Lodge inspired them. Duty was never to be ignored. The Great Light was a lamp to their feet. From it, they were never to depart. As long as they adhered to an obedience without question, they felt safe and secure. This, brethren, is your heritage, your obligation to it. Command your strict adherence to the principles and teachings which indelibly mark and make manifest what to say is, as in the generations that have passed, true Freemasonry. This is our heritage. It is worthy of our earnest, sincere, abiding devotion. Let nothing separate us from our courageous adherence to every principle which has made our inheritance so glorious. And that was from a magazine or a publication called The Rough Ashlar, published in August of 1892, and again in June of 1893. That's going to do it for this week. Again, feel free to follow us on Facebook and subscribe via iTunes or RSS. The iTunes subscription can be found on the webpage and, of course, in the podcast section of the iTunes store. As always, you can listen to the latest episode on the website, which is http://wcypodcast.blogspot.com. And again, feel free to comment on the blog page, on Facebook, or send an email to wcypodcast@gmail.com. If you have any questions about anything we have talked about, or if you're new to Masonry, or if you just want some more information. Thanks again for listening, and don't forget to tell your friends. And real fast, I'd just like to say thanks to everyone listening. Between all four episodes that have previously been published, it has been downloaded over 400 times already. So thanks again for this huge success, and I'll talk to you all next week. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.